and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 167, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The Peanut Butter King, Mr. Tony Esmond.
That's all I've had today is half a peanut butter sandwich, which I've had to stop eating because the noise will annoy you as I'm chewing.
Oh, no, that's fine. Well, I mean, I just need to ask you one important question. Crunchy or smooth?
This is crunchy, actually, but I'm prone to the smooth.
The smooth has its place, doesn't it? But, I mean, yeah. I think on the whole, it's got to be crunchy, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Oh. Who was that? Maybe it's our guest.
Needs new batteries.
Yeah. This week we have a guest, and we are very pleased to be joined by an up-and-coming artist who we talked about recently, and he's going to be the talk of the town thanks to his amazing work and the upcoming Kia Wordsmith, coming from Accent UK, I believe. It's Ian Ashcroft. Welcome to the show.
Hiya, thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, what a lot of work. Yeah.
Have you been practicing? Yeah. Have you been practicing that hello?
So many practices.
Yeah. No. The book is. I don't know. We're going to talk more about like your comics and how you got into it and stuff. But for me personally, you've just come out of the blue over the past six months. So and we're looking forward to talking about Kia Wordsmith. Because it's
definitely.
And obviously you've put your artwork, you know, out into other eyes as well. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But before that, how are we all? Are we all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm good. I'm working today, so I might have to disappear off in a bit, I'm afraid, guys. But I'm all right.
Just in case, like, there's a burning building and you need to save a family from it or something like that.
Yeah, we're doing coverage on the anal scene today, so I've got to get going.
I imagine all the opinions are one way. Thanks.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Do you know where you don't get terrible jokes, but you get brilliant comics?
My house?
No, you get plenty of terrible jokes as well, there, to be fair. But if you want loads of great comics, then just go to Comic House, our lovely sponsor. Yes, of course. I could have.
Amazing.
It was all right. I've done better. Do you know what I mean? I'll be back in the game soon enough. Just stick with me. Not like that. Not back on the game. Anyway, Comic House is our sponsor, and they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. They've got a huge selection of titles on their database. Lots of them like actual physical copies. So if you've got a comic of your own, you can list your book on there for free. And it's another avenue for selling your like physical issues and stuff. And when you sell a copy, they only take 1p commission, which is brilliant. And I'm thinking about putting the Red Mask issues on there eventually because I've taken my online shop down for a bit. So yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Which people have said to me about, but I'm busy.
Anyway, it's kind of easier just to leave it, to put it on one of these the app and just let people find it. And deal with it that way.
Yeah, I reckon. But Comic House, does have an app, like Dan was saying. God, you're a pro.
Yeah.
They've also
that was a segue, folks.
Thanks. But if you read your comics digitally, which we do more and more of on this show, but we still love the physical books. So much so that I need to buy a new bookcase in the next couple of weeks, but that's another topic of conversation entirely. But they have a huge selection of digital titles as well. Dan, do you know what's on there at the moment?
I do. Since every week they send out an update email, keeping readers informed.
You could just go along with it. You should just go along.
Oh, God. And, he's on fire this week.
Titles include the Bionic Man issue 14. Comic House issue 11, a comic called Super Zombies. Well, that's great. Undetermined volume 1, The Black Terror by Dynamite. I think that's a public domain character, isn't it? The Black Terror.
I think it was one of those, wasn't it? Along with the Daredevil character and all that sort of thing that they did, Project Superpowers or whatever it was.
That's right,
didn't they? Yeah.
There's a book called Survivor. I'd not heard of that one before. Death Inc. book 1. I recommended the last week by Charles H. Raymond, and we've got Vampirella issue 1. It looks like an Adam Hughes cover.
But if you dig more deeply into those Dynamite, I think Bionic Man is like 11 to 14, isn't it? So it's sort of a story arc, I think.
Right, okay.
And I think each of those Dynamite books you mentioned there have got like a bit of a story arc to them. So the Bionic Man one is the Bigfoot one, I think.
Yeah, he's kind of like punching through a wall with Bigfoot.
That's cool, isn't it? So, with Alex Ross covers, I think, as well, aren't they?
Yeah, that's
a good series, actually. I really enjoyed that series.
Is that the Bigfoot that's Andre the Giant?
Yes, I think he is, yeah. Almost looks like him as well, you can tell, can't you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Well,
that's a great sell on that one. I have to check that one out.
That used to freak me out as a kid when I watched it on telly. I used to watch the Bionic Man, and then Bigfoot was kind of his mate, but they had a fight in a bit sort of Marvel standard action, you know.
He threw a tree at him or something like that, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was a bit too older for me, probably more likely Vince, but I was watching a Bill Burr clip and he was talking about the old series, and it had John Saxon as the fifth. What was Steve Rogers?
$6 million.
$6 million, and I think he was the $7 million.
Yeah, he was his enemy. He was evil.
Yeah. And there's an episode we kicked his face off, and I'm like, that's for the time. That was well ahead of well ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Anything with John Saxon is worth watching. I love John Saxon. He's very good.
Yeah. And also, Dan, you slipped that in there, but you just insinuated that you're a young man and I'm older than you.
Substantially older.
If that came across like that, I didn't mean to slight you in that way. So
lie. Look, just because I feel
even
like I made out of Lego.
Age, you know.
Age before beauty. Yeah. Oh, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah. Just because you're a millennial, down with Trump. What?
I eat breakfast cereal for every meal. Anyway, but Comic House has
I'm never on time. Yeah, that's how cool I am.
That's a lie, Tony. I know you're always on time.
No, I'm always on time.
Yeah, you're very regular.
Shows how old I am.
Mm. Can I just have a quick moment? I get a lot of my colleagues that come in 5-10 minutes after they're supposed to have started and then spend another 10-15 minutes getting their breakfast ready.
I hate that.
This is fucking annoying.
Or they walk in 20 minutes late with a Starbucks in their hand. I said, you clearly had time to stop and get a Starbucks.
Yeah.
But actually,
I'm old school. I just start working when I'm supposed to. I mean,
yeah. Well, you wear a bowler hat and carry an umbrella. That's how you work.
Who is he? Mr. Ben? Bloody hell.
If only. Oh, Dan is Mr. Ben. It's the new series.
Yes.
Oh, who is Dan this week?
Yeah. Who are you this week, Dan?
Spaceman.
Spaceman Dan. Brilliant.
The dressmaker in Walthamstow.
That's gone hipster as well, Walthamstow. You can't go there.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. But you know what isn't hipster, but it's quite hip? That's Comic House. I need to get it.
Very good.
I need to finish this off. Anyway.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
You finished off and you finished me off with that. That was amazing. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, you know it. But if you want to subscribe to Comic House, go to comichouse.com, find out more. There's a 14-day free trial and you get access to their whole digital library, which is amazing. And there's so much more awesome stuff there to come. So there you go. And also...
I'm willing to bet Ian's left by now, isn't he? He's fucked off with this.
Probably.
He's gone for so long.
Yeah,
I'm still here.
What does that say about our show that the guest has to sort of say, I'm still here, don't worry, I'm still here.
Massively unprofessional.
You just carry on with your shite, and I'm still here.
But another thing that Comic House does do, actually, obviously they're self-publishing. Well, they're publishing a lot of comics.
They're bringing
out someone. And one that I was very fortunate to get a look at and absolutely adore, and I'm going to talk about it more on a future episode, is the artist and co-creator is Andy W. Clift. The writer and co-creator is Mike Garley. The colours, Nathan Ashworth, and letters are Mike Stock. And this is 32 Kills.
Oh, I need to read this. I haven't read this yet.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
It is absolutely phenomenal. It's already on my list. Obviously, I've got this huge list of like great books of the year, but that's immediately gone onto there.
Nice.
Yeah. It's very, very good. I will discuss it more at length soon, but obviously the word is out now, so I can mention it.
Let listeners know that whenever we get to the end of the year, we kind of flap. Everything and shit. What books have we do for end of the year?
You've been writing it down millions. Like a proper spod.
I haven't.
Like a cheat. He hasn't. He look. Vince has got a little list, isn't he, in his bedroom wall.
you know it.
I rely on my memory, which is absolutely faultless.
Yeah. sorry. Oh, that was just hilarious, Dan. You're You're a
when
card.
When are you buying them Comic Con again?
Oh. So, but anyway, 32...
I only ask that every fucking week.
Yeah. Yeah. But 32 Kills, I believe it's releasing at Thought Bubble. I could be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of books coming out at Thought Bubble this week, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Because that is this
Talking
Saturday.
Talking of Comic-Cons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice, Dan. You're trying to jump over me with a segue, Dan. Is that what you're trying to do?
I was just going to try and bring our guest into the fray.
Oh, don't try and shoot me down like that, son. You know what you were doing.
No.
But
no, I wasn't.
No, I know.
That's so, the end of the pod.
He's so easy to wind up. Brilliant. Love it. But yeah, take it away, Dan.
What way? Yesterday, when we came onto the show, Ian, you was telling us that you went to Comics Uncovered.
Oh, yeah, that's yesterday. Right. Yeah.
Organised by the lovely Shane Chebsney, and you had a portfolio review.
Yeah, I travelled down to Birmingham today, and I had a portfolio review with a DC editor called Jim Chadwick. And
oh, I know him. Yeah.
Yeah, he went through a couple of pointers, and he you know, it was pretty broad strokes, but he gave me some, you know, positive feedback and just some general tips to improve. But it was, I think the Dark Horse editor gave me a little bit more feedback on like what to do with certain panels and where I can improve and stuff. And he just said that things are going in the right direction and stuff. But I just need to keep on building up my portfolio and my published work really before I can think about moving up, if you like.
Did you show them completed pages, like in their entirety, like colours?
Yeah, I probably took too many pages with me, to be honest. His advice was to strip it back a little bit and just take your very best work, but I didn't really know how to approach it, so I pretty much brought the entirety of Keywordsmith issue one with me.
Yeah. So for those don't know, because obviously we've mentioned portfolio reviews on this show before.
Yeah.
I know Dan. Yeah. Dan, you've taken stuff. I think it was London Super Comic Con. You spoke to the guys at Valiant, didn't you?
I did. Yeah.
But
I've moaned about that often.
But for those that don't know, obviously we've heard about them. A lot of our listeners have probably done them as well. But some artists don't necessarily know what's involved with a portfolio review, or you know. And obviously this was your first one, Ian. So I guess this one was a great learning for you. So what did you think going into it? It was going to be like? Did you just have like literally just all the pages of Keir Wordsmith and some
pictures
and stuff?
I thought it'd be a little bit more in depth, if you like. They look through your portfolio. They look through the whole thing first, and then they start going through individual sort of panels. And the best portfolio I had sat down with Steve Tanner, who does the Flintlock books as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and he went through it, and he was really good. He was talking about how to, you know, get the eye to follow through the page properly and read the story, and he got more into the storytelling, really. So out of the three that gave me a review, his was the most informative, to be honest.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because obviously Steve's like, he's been Time Bomb Comics, he's been sort of indie publishing for a long time.
Yeah.
It's fascinating that the sort of indie person gave you a more straight up.
I don't know whether the ones from the bigger companies almost feel like they're under a bit of pressure, because I suppose at the back of your mind, there's always that hope that, you know, they might turn around and say, oh, do you fancy working for us, kind of thing, which is a massive long shot. But you go in there with that in the back of your mind. And I suppose when you're dealing with a small press, they can be a bit more that they haven't got that worry that, you know, they might have to turn you away, kind of thing. Yeah. So,
yeah. And sometimes you just want advice, because I know Chris Imber, he's had some portfolio reviews, but he went there and he's told us that he went there with the intention of just getting critiques, you know, so he could learn and do the next work better, rather than I want a job at Marvel and stuff. I think that's probably the kind of the way you got to go about it, isn't it? You got to go into portfolio reviews to better your own work.
I mean, you want that feedback, and if you're not getting that, it's essentially a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to get, even if you take a little kernel of kind of an insight into what that person's seen into your work and said, yeah, that I can see to identify the weakness there, and I can improve on that. That's something to work with.
I mean, you can tell the people who don't actually want advice, who show us occasionally comics, you know, they just want us to go, it's brilliant. I always compare it to there was a girl I knew, and she was complaining about how she could never get a boyfriend. And she asked another girl I knew her advice, and the other girl I knew gave her truthful advice. And you can either take it on, you can take it as helpful, or you can just like not expect it and think, oh, that's not what I wanted, and just fall out with everyone. And people, you have to be prepared to take a bit of a stab in the gut occasionally, don't we?
Yeah.
I think you've got to be really thick-skinned if you're doing artwork, because you put an awful lot of time and effort into it, and not everyone's going to like it, and you have to be able to sort of step back if someone says something you don't want to hear. I'm fine with that, really, to be honest.
There's definitely a cushioning to the Indians and sort of small press world as well. It's a lot nicer. You know what I mean? There's a lot of us are sharing artists, or we're sharing art, or like, and everyone's like, God, this person's amazing, I want them for my book, backwards and forwards. But, you know, that indie person, just say that they get a 4-issue arc for one of the big two, they immediately open themselves up to the anonymous masses. Who are the sort of miserable shits and like just the nasty people that, you know. I mean, Chris Wildgoose absolutely knocked it out of the park with his Batgirl. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you're guaranteed there's 99% of people like us loved it, but there's going to be some people that
subjective thing, isn't it? I mean, we've all got people that come to us and say, like, what do you think, and you know, where am I going wrong, where am I going right, and there's probably easily 10 people who send me their new comic to see if I can spot anything and what I think of it long before release, you know.
Yeah.
In a more not in a review way, but in a more sort of just between you and I, what do you think, am I going right, am I going wrong, you know. And I always start it with, look, I really liked it, there's just a few little things I think, you know, that's the way I do it. And if you're like I did it with Garvey always sends me his new book long before release, you know.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I really like it, just this one small thing and this thing, you know. And it's like, and he's always like, oh, thanks a lot, you know. That's how you got to be. It's a business, isn't it, at the end of the day, you know.
I mentioned this story before, but someone had got paid an artist to do their script. It was looked fantastic, but to save money, they'd lettered it themselves, and it was really amateurish.
Yeah,
and I pointed out, look, you need to get someone on who knows this, because you've got this script, it's great, the artwork's fantastic, and then you've kind of, the cherry on the cake is like some dog's droppings, because you really messed it up with, I didn't use that terminology, but like the amateurish, the text and balloons is just killing it, and they were kind of a bit sour about it. But then a couple of weeks later, they posted up the pages where someone had known what they're doing, had come along and changed it, and it was like 100 times better.
Yeah, I mean,
the other side of it is you can't crush people's dreams as well, can you? Because there's some, I was speaking to one fellow there, and I think it hadn't gone quite as well, and you could see he was just deflated, and you don't want that either, do you? You want to pick out the good points too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think is to be always give them both barrels, and at the end, leave them on a high by saying, but this and this is excellent.
This shows promise, this is really good, this bit. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's always, I mean, I'm doing a course at the moment, that's what I'm sitting in a Travelodge for, but there's a whole stupid saying of feedback is a gift, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's done in the right way, it's both helpful, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely give the avenue to kind of explore onwards as well, so say, look, your hands need weak. What I'd recommend is doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Rather than say, oh, your hands are not very good. And then that's the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't draw, but I can, you know, I've heard lots of people, especially Lambo, pardon me, telling people to go to these life drawing classes. And I think they're a really valuable thing to do as well.
I would go to one of them fucking every week if there was one near me. Yeah. I've done the research and there isn't. Yeah. But
sometimes you won't even take a pad, will you, Dan?
What does that mean?
if you think you know what it means, you can email us at
you can come to see Dan Vince Deathmatch at Nottingham Comic Con.
No, he's giving a proper loving. I'm gonna hold you in my arms, Dan. Are you prepared?
I'm gonna wake up sick.
Oh God! I've got
Jesus. What are you doing in my room, Vince?
Shh.
No, because you got the single room. I had to share with him last time, and I was in the camp bed, the kids' bed. He had the proper bed.
What a night that was. Anyway, last thing on the portfolio review, because I know some people might have certain thoughts about it. The words portfolio review aren't the same as job interview. It is a lot of people go into them thinking, this is my chance to show Marvel or DC or Dark Horse, you know, they should hire me from this. That's not, I don't think that's what they're there for, is it really? That's,
No, definitely not. But I think that thought, that hope is always there in the back of your mind. If you're, if you're being honest, like it's there, you'd think, oh, this could be it. But
yeah.
I mean, I've seen a couple when they've given the card and said, like, contact me via email. Like, so you're not even at the interview process. You're just kind of.
I got that today. I got the card and that, but I don't think it'll. He just said he wanted like my best pages for my portfolio review, and then said it, send it in. He said he was really honest. He said, you know, it probably won't lead to work, but what it will mean is that people will have heard about you and seen your work at Dark Horse.
And also, it starts. Brilliant. It could start a communication. That is the biggest thing about comics that you need. Do you know what I mean?
And a little change in editorship. I mean, I personally think you're more than suited for Dark Horse, and I've got to tell you. I would say you're more than suited for something like Vertigo as well, you know.
Yeah.
And it just takes a different editor to see another way that he can sort of, you know, bring you along a bit and get you a bit of work that will suit you.
His advice was to just basically keep putting books out through the small press, and you know, that's the best way to do it and get more work published. Because, like you said before, I've just sort of come from nowhere really.
So. You know, Keir Wordsmith, is that your first comic? I want to make sure I get this right. That's your first sort of published comic work?
No, I did a 10-page short story for Accent UK in an anthology they do called Tales of Western Noir.
Ah, good anthology, that.
Yeah, so I did that, and then on the back of that, Dave West, who sort of set that up, he offered me Keir Wordsmith.
Nice. So, and that is like your full sort of like an entire sort of comic start, middle,
and
end.
Yeah. It's the first time I've had to do anything. I think it's 25 pages in full colour, so I had to do the colouring and
bloody hell.
I mean, straight out, I mean, pretty much apart from a 10-page tester, you're straight out the gate at that quality. What's your background in drawing then? Is it something, were you drawing professionally otherwise, or?
No, well, I'm an art teacher at a secondary school, so I've got that. But just, you know, did it at school, did it at college, and then did my degree in it. But then sort of just drifted away from it for quite a while. And to be honest, I didn't really start looking at comics until about 3 or 4 years ago, because a fellow that lives within a mile of me used to work for Accent UK 2000 AD, and he did a couple of stories for them and Calibre Comics, and he gave me a couple of scripts, and I built up a portfolio, and then I showed that portfolio at Thought Bubble, and that's when Dave West sort of picked me up in 2015. Yeah.
What are your influences then? In terms of like, because your art has a there's a definite individuality to it, but I want to say I can see an influence there. I don't want to name names, but you know, obviously being an art teacher and like loving art, I mean, what influences you in the art world?
Well, the big one in comics would be Jay Lee, I think.
Yes, that's exactly the one I was going to go for.
I could definitely see that in Keir Wordsmith.
Mm. Yeah, that would be. Yeah. I can remember his work on The Dark Tower. When I saw that's what really started getting me interested in comics and in the idea of doing it as an art form. And I think, he would have been the main influence, definitely.
Jay Lee's an interesting one as well, because I remember when he first arrived in the 90s, he was one of those artists that I hated his artwork.
Yeah, I didn't find it palatable at all.
It was scratchy, it was almost aggressive, wasn't it? You know, it just didn't look appealing. But then, move forward, you know, softer palettes, whatever he's using, and then The Dark Tower is amazing stuff, what he does in that. It's brilliant. I mean,
I'd say a lot of his covers I really like at the moment as well. He does a lot of DC and Marvel covers, doesn't he? And there's a real sort of flow and sort of gentleness to it that you just don't see elsewhere sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
I remember reading some, they did that big X-Men Age of Extinction. And like when it went to his work on, I think it was X-Force at the time. Mm. And I was like, oh, this is really jarring. Because everyone at the time was trying to do a Jim Lee. And then he was doing his thing. And I wasn't a fan of it at the time.
Yeah,
he's definitely grown and changed.
Yeah.
Are you aware of the artist P. Craig Russell at all, Ian?
No, I don't think so.
I'd put him as a sort of an influence on Jay Lee, actually. If you look at it, he did The Ring of the Nibelung, and he did a little bit of Killraven and stuff like that. But he's got that sort of that flow. Look him up, and you'll see.
He's definitely
the sort of artist who could have worked on Sandman or something like that as well. You know?
J.H. Williams as well. For his layouts and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But there's loads, to be honest. It's like, as soon as I started like getting into comics, it was like Lieber Mayo as well, who does some of the DC stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the Joker graphic and all that sort of thing, didn't he?
Yeah.
And caused a fight at London Super Comic Con while we watched, which was quite funny. Yeah.
Did he?
I mean, he didn't, but some of the people.
The fans did,
They were trying to be rude and get a signature before they maybe should have. But he was very nice.
He was super nice, wasn't he? Yeah, he was.
So, in terms of your art, then, what is your artistic process?
Well, I'll sketch it all out on just normal printer paper, really. You know, just doing really quick sort of sketches where we get everything right and sort of lay it out, and then I'll start to work onto the Bristol board, and I try and keep my pencils quite detailed and put a lot of work into them, and they take me probably the most amount of time, and then I'll scan that, and I won't ink, I'll just use the pencils that I've done and then start colouring it in Photoshop.
So you don't ink it at all?
No, there's no inking. It's just all the pencils, and then put it into Photoshop, and then sort of like turn the sort of greys of the pencils into blacks.
Okay, all right.
Nice. Yeah,
just adjust the levels.
Pretty much. But I'm a bit of a novice on Photoshop, to be honest. I'm still really learning it. I do it in a really backwards kind of way. I just sort of put everything on one layer. I treat it almost like I know. Someone needs to show me how to use it properly. Like, I just put everything on the one layer, like a normal painting, and just sort of like keep the colours quite translucent and just build it up.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I've never heard of that process before. That's fascinating and terrifying.
Yeah, there's a few people who use it to sort of speed up, aren't they? I've heard of it before. Someone pointed out to me, I can't remember who it was now. Saying that that's almost like a faster way that a lot of people had done for a while, especially at the invention of when sort of more digital art started. I think it was more and more common.
Mm. Where you just go for it, and just there's no layers. You just kind of one bit, and you're just working away.
Yeah. And I think like I was reading Adam Hughes, and he was saying if you have to step back 5 times, then you're probably going wrong somewhere. So.
I just try and
go for it, really, and try and get it all down on the page, and not to use too many colours, really, just keep it quite a limited palette.
Yeah.
So the colours all work together.
Taking it back to, I was working on just finishing off some of the pages for the Awesome Comic issue 3, and my Photoshop was just struggling under the weight of some of the pages because I have so many layers. I was like, I saved every couple of minutes because I thought it kept crashing on one certain page. And I find like if you hide some of the layers which are kind of affecting the others, like if you've got kind of color overlays that wash everything underneath, you take them off, it's a lot easier on the computer. So Photoshop tip there for colorists. I'm sure you really knew that.
I didn't really, to be honest.
For those that don't know what Keir Wordsmith is about, did you want to just give us a little summary before we dig into it a bit?
She's someone who's living in a world at war, really, and her dad's gone away to fight the war, and she's sort of frustrated with the daily life that she leads, and at night she sort of takes herself off running across the rooftops of the city that she lives in. And basically she comes across a stranger who she sort of chases along the rooftops, and that leads her to a like a magical tower, and basically she finds something there that she steals, and that sort of sparks off the next chapter, if you know what I mean. She's sort of living in this fantasy realm. It's really hard to describe it without giving a huge amount of it away, because it's quite a simple story in the first issue. Dave gave me like basically a four page, Dave West, the writer, gave me a four page sort of script that didn't have any panels or breakdown like that. It was really open to interpretation. So I just did my best to sort of, I knew he wanted originally 24 pages and then we increased it to 25, but I just did my best to try and hit all the little beats of the story, and he had some really descriptive passages in there, and that's where some of the more fantastical images that you see come into it. Because she's sort of having these daydreams as she's sort of going through the book as well, so there's splash pages that sort of link back to that.
Because the way people who listen to that might think it's a sort of free-running kind of thing over the rooftops, but to me it's more akin to a sort of ballet up in the sky, almost.
Yeah.
There's a balletic element to it, and the way she sort of throws herself off buildings, it isn't like this sort of frenetic, like run kind of thing. It's like it's a dance almost, isn't it? And it, and when she meets things and people and stuff like that, there's a music to it, you know. And
yeah, I wanted it to be quite graceful as she was going across the roofs, and that'd be part of a character, and quite controlled as well. She knows what she wants.
And there's a wonderful sort of sense of movement when she's like, she's almost. It's flight. It's almost the way she moves, and there's a wonderful page which is just three vertical panels as she sort of falling through the air. There's this bird that's moving up through the air, and they're almost crossing paths on this page. But it's almost, when you look at it, it's almost like she could be like, she should be able to float in the air, you know, because she's so graceful. You know, it's not heavy-handed, is it? This sort of like the free running, shall we call it?
Thanks so much. So many people comment on that page. It's gone down really well. I mean, it went down really well today at the Comics Uncovered. It seems to be the one that stands out to a lot of people. It's funny because it's also the one that took me the least time to do. So
it's the classic art way that you can spend forever on a page, no one will notice. You bust something out really quickly, and that's everyone's favourite. That's always the way.
Your comic also strikes me as the sort of one that will give someone a headache at Comixology when they have to do the guided view. It's a bit like Williams' Batman. It's Batwoman, sorry. It's a bit like that. It's because you play about with panel shapes and movement and stuff like that as well, do you?
Yeah, I do. I try to use some circular panels in there. That, again, came from Jay Lee. Some of his layouts on his Before Watchmen book that he did.
Yeah.
There was quite a lot of circular panels, and I wanted to get... I really like the way that looks, so I just sort of started including it into my pages.
So Dave gives you like detailed descriptions, but he doesn't sort of direct you in terms of what the panel should be in terms of shape or size, you know?
No, not on the first issue, but on in the second one, he has been a bit... There's more like, in panel one, we should see this and so on, but no, the first issue was very much... Just basically descriptive passages and little bits. It's almost like when you read Dave's work, it's a bit like poetry. He's got like a really good way of sort of describing what's in his imagination, and I've got to try and transfer it. Yeah,
I think that has to be the way, especially if someone's handling dreamlike images or like strange creatures or, you know, hallucinations. Yeah. You kind of have to. You know, if you've got a definite vision of what is happening, you have to tell the artist, don't you? Because they could just do something that is totally inappropriate for what your vision is.
Unless... Oh, we've said this before, haven't we? Yeah. We said that a script is a conversation, isn't it? And you've got to get across that mood and that vibe and that the feeling that you want in the art, in the conversation with the artist, you know? Yeah. And if you can do that, that's a real feat, I think.
Yeah, I'm really lucky with Dave because he's so encouraging. I'll send him a page and he's always really positive about it. He's never turned anything back. He's always just, even if it hasn't been exactly what he's had in mind, he's always gone with it. And I'm really grateful to him, to be honest, because he was the first person to pay me for my work. So
that's always good.
Yeah. You're always going to love those people. So how has the experience been like then, you know, for your sort of first full comic on the whole, you know, in terms of what you've learned, the good, the bad?
Well, it's time consuming. I've heard you talk on the pod quite a lot about you just have to knuckle down and do it. I've got two young girls that work full-time job, and sometimes getting it all done is hard. It's difficult to do, but you just
Do you mean you've got children who are two young girls, or you just actually have two young girls in your house?
No, they are my children.
I guess that's one of the things like a portfolio review doesn't show is like you can say like I've got these six great pages, but you don't tell them, oh, that took me fucking about a year to do.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of, I guess they never really know that till they start working with you.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I try and sort of figure out roughly how long each page takes me, and it takes between about 5 and 8 hours to do a page, really. So yeah.
It's good still. That's not bad.
Yeah.
For the amount of detail I can see in your pages, I'd put it as 2-3 times that amount, to be fair.
That is just the pencils though.
Right. Okay.
It takes ages as well. So
how much of a hand did you have in the design of the characters? Is that something you went backwards and forwards a bit? With the writer
Dave,
on, or?
Dave gave like a description of Kea that I stuck pretty close to.
The sort of short, dark hair and all that sort
of thing. Yeah. There's another character in it that you sort of meet towards the end that we went backwards and forwards with because it was quite a difficult concept, a difficult idea to get right. But
is that the one with the Mars bar on his face, or?
The what?
The Mars bar. That's Cockney rhyming slang for Scar.
Right.
Oh, really? Is it a bloody hell? I never would have got that because I was just thinking, I can't remember a Mars bar on anyone.
Any mention of confectionery?
Yeah.
It confuses him.
That character did go through a couple of sort of like stages. Yeah.
Okay.
Originally, I drew him a lot younger than he was. So, and then we changed it a little bit. Yeah.
One thing I like about your work as well, there's a real consistency to the looks of characters. And I like that because it's something that I certainly struggle with sometimes, even though I'm not doing a realistic sort of character. But having that, you know, the face shape, the way everything looks from different angles and stuff, that can be quite tricky. You know, I think it's something that, you know, I certainly take for granted sometimes. You know, a jawline. Do you know what I mean? If you're an artist who's attempting to draw different face shapes, then you really have to be on point. That it has to be consistent all the way through. Because you see a lot of, like, for instance, maybe the DC books, some of the artists, all the guys have the same shape face, all the women have the same shape face. And that's just a style that you can almost photocopy all the way through. But if you're working with different jawlines, different face shapes, sizes, you know, weight, height, you know, to get that consistency is quite difficult. So how detailed were your, like, character, did you do character sheets for the entire book?
Yeah, I did, but there isn't that many characters in it, and I tried to keep the characters so they all had something that would help you keep it consistent. So the scar on that guy's face was one of those things, like, even if I didn't quite get that consistency in the way his face looked, because you had that scar, you'd know it was him.
Okay, so a shortcut, yeah, which is what we do, isn't it? But I have to say, Kea is extremely consistent and extremely beautiful in the way she looks, you know. And you can just tell that her appearance is her character almost, isn't it? You know, you can tell she's this sort of slightly rebellious, you know, with the short hair and, you know, the way she looks.
She had to be likable, otherwise I don't think the comic would work. So
yeah,
that's what you try to do. You're trying to convey that through the character, and hopefully that's come across, and hopefully it's worked well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Are you drawn to those sort of fantastical, dream-like sort of ideas? Is that what drew you to the idea?
I feel like I'm better at drawing like people and animals, and I think I get worried about straight lines, really. So cars and buildings and stuff like that.
That's a hell of a phobia you got there, dude.
But yeah, there's certain things that are going to suit my style. But it's nice when you get a script where you do have to draw something that pushes you a little bit out of your comfort zone, because you know, you need to be able to draw everything, I suppose.
Yeah. You've got to test yourself, haven't you? There's moments of like, you know, I don't like drawing horses. Oh, this script's got 5 horses in it. You know, it's terrifying, but they'll give you the best sense of achievement once you finish the page and you're happy with it.
Yeah, well, that Western book I drew had loads of horses on the first page. So
you got it all done in one go then. That's all right.
That can boost up your skills when you're pushed to kind of draw something you wouldn't choose to.
Yeah.
It's a great way of kind of just getting better, really.
Yeah.
Because you have to kind of, improve and force yourself to do better.
Yeah. And those sort of little details as well, and those things, if you nail it, that's a calling card. Do you know what I mean? There's you know, certainly there are people that want to write Western stories or Western books, and they're going to look for an artist that is capable of doing that kind of work.
Well, in Kia, obviously, because she lives in a city and she's running over rooftops, there did have to be quite a lot of buildings. But
yeah.
I tended to focus on more traditional buildings and old-fashioned buildings, so I could get a little bit of a, you know, I could get away with a few little...
There's a very sort of Roman and sort of Venetian feel to, like, the landscape and, like, the architecture.
Yeah, although a lot of the buildings are based on buildings in England and Scotland and Ireland as well, because they've sent through some photographs from Glasgow of buildings that he really likes, so I use some of them. And
okay.
The Liver buildings are in there. And
okay, yeah.
There's a few little bits...
It's really handy when sort of writers send through stuff to artists, like they can help in that regard. Like I've been sent mood boards for characters that's got bits and pieces. This helps you get to nailing the look a lot quicker.
Definitely. I spent about 2 days Googling kebab shops in the Old Kent Road at one point on Cockney Kung Fu, just to send pictures around of what I thought it should look like. You know, it's like, I think it's really good fun to do that as well. Yeah.
I think the writer feels a bit more kind of, they've had a bit more input in the look as well.
Yeah, and it's not so much of a surprise if it goes, you know, it's not quite what you want when it comes your way and stuff like that, I think sometimes.
Yeah.
We are control freaks, writers, so that's what
I mean, obviously, Keir Wordsmith has, you know, been a success on Kickstarter, which is brilliant. Anyone who sees a couple of the pages, you know, its success speaks for itself, really, doesn't it, I think, in the book.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I've got to just say it as well. Andy Bloor does the design on it, and he did the video on it as well.
He did
a great job on that video. I was delighted with it when he did it,
Good old Andy.
He's a secret weapon, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's done a lot of things with Accent UK, to be honest.
Yes, he has. His book, two books, the Wolfmen books. There's two books out so far, brilliant books. That's what got me into Andy's work to begin with. Stunning stuff. And also he was artist for the second issue of Awesome Comics.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a pin-up for Keir as well.
Awesome. So obviously there's going to be more Keir in the world. I mean, this seems like the beginning of a bigger adventure and story.
I promised Dave I'd do 4 of them. So,
alright. So it's an ongoing, and you're doing the first 4. Is that how it works?
He feels like he's got more story, but he sort of made me promise that I'll do the 4, and I'm happy to be honest, because
he's paying you.
Yeah.
But also because he is a really nice guy. So.
He seems that he definitely does. Yeah.
Is this 4 issues an arc then? Okay.
I don't know how it's all going to plan out, though, because, to be honest, I'm sort of... I get the script and then I do the art, but I don't know really what the end goal will be at the moment.
I mean, that's 100 pages. That's a good trade, isn't it? Plus pin-ups and process and stuff like that. That'd make a lovely sort of collection at the end as well, you know?
Yeah, that would be amazing, really.
Yeah.
Well, it will be amazing when it comes out. Yeah.
Do you sell your original work as well, your original artwork and stuff like that, do you? Or...
Yeah, I've got a couple of the pages on Kickstarter, and I do sell quite a bit. I get quite a bit of work coming through Instagram, which is pretty good.
Which is where you did Soho Red. Yeah, that's where I found you as well.
Yeah, that's the only one. I haven't got Twitter or Facebook. I've just sort of put all my eggs in one basket and just gone through there. So
I think you've done well there.
Yeah. How have you found that sort of journey just using Instagram then?
pretty good because I'm not stretching myself too thinly, if you know what I mean. And
yeah.
also,
it
has been really good. I did like before K.A. Kane's Kickstarter, I did like a little incentive thing where I said I'd do a sketch of any character as long as people sort of pledged to the book. So I went through a few of them. That most people who asked for me to do the sketch picked up the book, I think.
Good.
I pledged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those who didn't, shame on you.
Yeah, but you know, I think Instagram's an interesting one. It's definitely one that certainly the Awesome Pod has an Instagram account that we don't use nearly enough.
Yeah, we don't do it. I think as well, it changed Instagram when you could start private messaging on there as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I only realised that you could do that because I suddenly saw a little sign in the top hand right of the screen and thought,
so right, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I completely missed that as well. So apologies to anyone that's messaged us. We're not ignoring you. We just don't know how technology works. But no, I think Instagram is something I want to make more of a use of.
And the reason I like it is there's less of the usual shite that we're getting on Twitter and Facebook. On Instagram, it's just about people appreciating images, isn't it? You know, which is so much nicer.
Yeah, you don't get any of that.
Yeah, you don't, do you? And I mean, like we had previous guest Todd Oliver on, who's also at Thought Bubble. He was saying he started putting strips on there and he's getting attention because of that. And I think it's a great little thing, great little promotion tool, I think.
Mm.
And it's where the kids are, I'm told. Is that true? It's where all the cool kids go. Yeah.
It's unfortunate, it's social media. We seem to talk about social media quite a lot, actually. I guess it does have a relatively big impact on...
It's such a huge part of comics now. You can't not be involved in it in some way. Otherwise, like, you're losing major marketing tools.
We keep trying to back away, don't we? Yeah. And then we have to come back to promote the next episode or the new issue or something like that.
Get sucked back in to the
light. It's like the mafia. Yeah.
God.
It's like mafia slightly more wholesome.
Yeah. Or it's when Vince tried to leave the Masons that time. Do you remember? And they put a death thing out for him.
We don't talk about that.
No. We know where the bodies are buried.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'll end up in a wicker man.
Yeah. I'd love to be a member of the Masons with Vince, and you go for a pint of lager. How much?
I do. Yeah, I do that
the
anyway.
Masons just do mates rates for each other? Is that essentially what it is?
I think so. And they wear pennies. Yeah.
Isn't mates?
They don't have a problem with that.
Surely that's a term for something else, isn't it? Mates rates.
Yeah, to be fair, I wouldn't really join a club where there was no women. That's firstly, I'm obviously into the company of women for a number of reasons. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, I was a member of the Quantum Leap fan club for a while. That was quite fun.
Oh boy,
I bought a magazine during the week. I told this joke to Gareth Hopkins called Men Only. I was a bit pissed off. There's like, is this full of women? There's no blokes in it.
I think 1969 just called and want their joke back. I don't know if
oh dear. But anyway.
It's like that video I once watched called Shit Piss Fuck. You know. At least it lived up to the title.
Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
It just went off the rails.
Yeah.
Blame the guest, move on.
Yeah, Ian. But anyway, obviously you are now deeply entrenched in comics now. So you're part of the collective, so your world has forever been changed. What about conventions? Do you have any sort of lined up? What is your plan in terms of doing that side of working in comics?
I'm going to be at Nottingham. I've got a table there that's going to be the first, and I think that's where Kia is going to be launched as well. So,
nice,
yeah,
brilliant. There's quite a few books launching at Nottingham this year. It's really shaping up to be a good con again, Oh, good. You're not doing Thought Bubble this year, Ian? Or,
well, I don't know, I won't be having a table there for definite, but I'm meant to be moving house this weekend, so if that's going through, then I don't think I'll be at Thought Bubble, but I'd love to be
come
there.
On. What's wrong with you?
So selfish. Yeah, so that's the thing about comics, people. If you've got a life, live your life. Comics aren't, you know, Thought Bubble's not going anywhere, so you can always go back next year.
Yeah, I think I'll be there next year. Yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry.
I was just going to say I haven't been there since it's moved venue. So I really would love to be there. Yeah.
Really, it's really busy last year. I have to say, much busier than the previous year. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Is it in the same sort of area this time? They don't exactly
in the town centre. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I think four marquees in the town centre, and then the Coachworks Theatre where they're doing the talks again. Yeah, it looks great.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I'll be in the Victoria one. So come and see me.
Yes. Yeah, because you're going to have like you're going to be at a table, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah. Yeah, doing the no-brow table. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a big show for them.
Yeah.
I'm being serious.
I think it is, really is, because Hilda drops. So, yeah, we're very excited. My front room is just full of boxes that Stan is currently sitting on.
I've watched that trailer so many times.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So good, man. How good is it?
So good, that show. The Hilda show is going to be phenomenal.
I mean, I'm literally the grumpiest person in the world, but that melted my heart, that little trailer. It's so nice, isn't it?
Yeah. So good. If you haven't seen it, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, good idea.
Because Netflix, I don't know whether you see it. You know they do that automatically playing trailers whenever you pop on, and you're like, I don't want to watch this. I haven't seen the Hilda trailer pop on yet.
No, I haven't. No. It's only a week away, isn't it?
Yeah. So it might appear on the actual day. So
Might only be... on the kids' profiles, that might be something they do.
Oh, no, is it?
I don't know that. That's just speculation.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know how it works. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's cracking. But obviously, anyway, back to Keir Wordsmith and Ian. Obviously, you're going to have, like, four issues of this, and this is a fantastical story. What other genres would you like to play with in the future? Have you thought about that?
Question. I like that.
Yeah.
I have got another project sort of coming up with some friends of the show, but I haven't spoken to. Ooh. Yeah, I don't know whether
you can say.
Yeah, I don't know. It's more along book illustration kind of route, but okay. I'm really excited about it. It's sort of
brilliant.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you about it at Nottingham.
Yeah, we'll talk off air.
I thought we were friends, Ian, but you appear not to have told me. I'm a bit
We're learning a lot about him this week, aren't we? We really are.
I thought you was considering taking on another whole comic project. I was like, bloody
hell. That is impressive. Plus, we're doing, for anyone that didn't know, but I do shout about it, you and I are doing a little thing for the next Little Heroes issue. We're doing a two-pager, aren't we? So...
Thanks, that's quite fun.
Oh mate, don't thank me. Yeah, thanks to you, man. That's brilliant. It's only a two pager, and it's about a little kid in the schoolyard and something about his parents, which we won't ruin. But I've seen you sent me through the first page. It looks amazing. It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
How I imagined it. It's great when you, as a writer, you write something, and it comes out exactly as you've imagined it. It's just incredible. You know, it's like. It's like all your dreams come true, you know, because I'm always a little bit hesitant when I go to press the download on the page and I think, oh, bloody hell, no, he exactly captured it. So that was very good. Thank you, man. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
So are you interested in doing more shorter stories as well, more anthology type stuff in between, like a page or two here?
Be careful what you say here, because I can think of at least four writers who will immediately email you as saying so.
I'd love to take on as many different stories as I could, really. It's just, it's time, isn't it? You get that time to sit down and do it, but...
Yeah, and you have to be careful kind of what you do in terms of scheduling, because I spent 1 year doing a lot of sort of shorter stuff, and it took away from other projects, do you know what I mean? Before I knew it, I committed myself, and I wasn't going to go back on commitments, so I'd already committed myself to a lot of shorter stuff, which then pushed back other work.
Do you find it difficult going from one project to another?
It all depends on the project. I think it's always nice to try something different with each one rather than doing the same thing all the time.
Dan, we've discussed this week, haven't we, Dan? You got an offer of a bit of work, and you just wanted a few ideas thrown about, and we were chatting about it on the WhatsApp or online rather. just about what sort of ideas you come out. And sometimes it is a bit like that. And is you are sort of pulled from pillar to post as a creator sometimes, aren't you? You know?
Yeah. It's it's a project we're kind of working on at the moment, but essentially kind of the creator of this offered up, said, "I'll just go for it, do what you want." And it's kind of odd that I've never had that really before.
So he's kind of given you a character and said, just go for it, isn't he?
Just go for it. And it's kind of, it's really interesting to kind of do it. On the side note, Tony, I've got a bit of feedback. I'm going to feedback to you after the show on that. So, that's an evolving project right now.
there's feedback upon feedback upon feedback.
I've got to get the first page done for Friday. So the longer it rolls on.
We've got to rewrite, have we?
Yeah, it's it's all good.
to be fair, I did write that script in 31 minutes, so it was in the time it took me to change trains.
But we've kind of I went back and kind of got some back and forth with the chap who's commissioning it, and he's given some ideas, and I've put the bare bones in. And I was going to see what you thought and send it back to you. So,
we can talk
about that next time and see how the collaborative project worked.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
I'm sort of working with two writers here, which is really odd.
It's strange for you, isn't it? Yeah, and I'm I've tried to sort of take a back seat because it's someone else's creation. You've got to kind of just, you know, go with what they say. But okay. Interesting. I look forward to hearing what that's about, mate. Yeah.
It's kind of odd as well. I'm feeling a bit frazzled because I'm obviously just getting off the artwork for part three. So kind of I've just been thinking art, not the writing, and I sometimes find it troubling trying to get into characters I don't really know that well.
There's a certain sort of rhythm to it as well. Once you get on a roll, for instance, like I finish off the third part of like Murder Road, and but my thinking is to just get on with the fourth part, and I've already started like sketching out to keep that rhythm going and to finish that off early before going to another, like before going to the like the Red Mask fully, because it's a different art style. I mean it still looks like my art, but you know, there's different thought processes for it in the Red Mask.
There's a lot to be said for that, as you mate, because the fact you don't have to do it as it's coming out, do you? There's nothing to stop you doing it. Do you know what I mean? That's interesting. And because we all evolve in our style, even the style of writing that I do changes. You know, I think if I went and rewrote part four of Cockney Kung Fu, it would sound differently, you know?
You're right.
And I think, with the Red Mask from Mars, I mean, my art style has obviously developed and changed a bit.
Yeah.
But when I go back to it, I still want it to be consistent with the other issues. Yeah. So I'm going to, and you know, people will say, well, it doesn't really matter if your art's changed, it could look completely different. But I kind of want that consistency when it's, you know, when you have the collection, when you see all the pages. But I don't want it to feel like I'm taking a step back. And so my hope is the learnings I've had from like Mandy the Monster Hunter and you know, Murder Road and things like this, all of these learnings will help just tweak the style I have for the Red Mask to make that better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it'll work. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
What about you, Ian? Do you have to kind of almost click a bit in your head to put a switch over to get back into the mindset to do Kia when you go back for issue two? Is it something that you have to be in a certain groove to get that style out, or is it something you try?
Because I did it over quite a long time, I can see where maybe it's changed a little bit from even in the first issue. That it was really nice you said that it was consistent, but I kind of know that there was a little bit of an evolution while I was doing it. And I've done like about 3 or 4 pages of issue 2 already. Because I want to get it out basically the same time next year as well. So we can kickstart it again. But yeah, I do. I think you have to have like the right working conditions. You have to be, I don't really like walking away from the art once I've started it. It's something that I've had to really push myself to do, because I used to always like to sit down, do the whole thing, and then sort of move on. But now I'm getting better at sort of going to something, doing about an hour on it, and then stepping back, and then that's helped me speed up really. So not feeling that everything has to be perfect before you walk away.
So it is part partly an OCD thing as well as an artistic approach almost, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And there's points where I think I could really make my life a lot, but I could make things a lot easier for myself at times, and I don't. I always make it difficult. It's just, I don't know why.
We're all a little bit self-destructive, aren't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, we've got a couple of little questions from the Twitter. Oh. But before we do, I just got one final thing about the Keir Wordsmith cover. Are you responsible for the sort of font and the look of the title and the way the name
is? Yeah, I did that, yeah.
I mean, it looks like that's because it fits so well with the rest of the story and stuff. But also, the design's just spot on. It really makes it stand out, I think.
Yeah, I wanted... There's an element in the story where there's these sort of black swirls that happen quite late into the story, to tell you the truth. But I wanted to sort of call back to them in the fonts that are used, so it's almost like it's spreading across the page like ink or something.
Yeah,
I enjoyed doing that font, to be honest. I haven't done anything like that before, so... Yeah.
There's a strange sort of calligraphic, but...
Yeah.
It's almost like smoke as well. It's got that kind of feel to it.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. Anyway, yeah, we put a shout out on Twitter, just a couple of short ones. Old 4P, Daryl Thorpe. as soon as he heard we're talking about art, he got in touch with quite a few questions. God bless him, because he loves his art and we love his art.
So, his art's amazing.
Yeah. We covered a question about influences, but he says, how do you progress? Are you influenced by others, or is it simply a never-ending series of self-development? We covered that a little bit, but how do you feel you're progressing as an artist?
I do look at a lot of other artists outside of comics and comic artists as well, and illustrators that are going on at the moment. There's a guy called Paul Jackson who's really amazing, and I just look at a lot of different, like I say, illustrators. I can remember as a kid growing up, I'd copy illustrations out of books and stuff like that, just trying to get my skills up.
Do you think it's almost like travel broadens the mind, but it's the same with art, isn't it? You have to look beyond the boundaries of comics. I think if you just stick to comics, we're just going to see the same thing all the time, aren't we?
Yeah, and you've got to look at someone like Sean Phillips, who looks, you know, there's a lot of paperback novel, you know, McGuinness type stuff in his work. And, you know, I think I compared yours to almost like a prog rock album cover or something like that, I think.
And pulp sort of book covers as well. But I'll be honest, like, I did a lot of art in my education and going on to being an art teacher and everything, but the artists that really are inspiring me are the comic book artists. They're the ones who, like, that's the first time I've really, really gotten interested in other artists' work. I've always sort of, like, liked art, but not loved it, if you know what I mean. But
Yeah.
I mean, with the comic artists are the guys who are that combination of putting out regular work to make money, to support an industry, but also they've got to survive almost, and to be good and to be respected. They've got to have that experimental eye and that, you know, that creativity as well. You know, it's a really interesting dynamic, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
I was looking at, like, I like to go back and look at some of the like, have you heard of Sergio Toppi? Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, yeah. I love his stuff. Yeah, we talked about
it. It's just amazing. And
yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Sam Bisley and Glenn Fabry, all those people, just find their work just absolutely amazing. And I'm sure it creeps into mine somewhere along the line.
Yeah. Yeah. We're influenced by so many things that we're not aware of, aren't we? Do you know what I mean? And it's stuff that we, from donkeys years ago, that suddenly you discover, oh, yeah, that's where that comes from.
And it's always great when a new artist, like, you see their work and you think, oh, that's brilliant. Like, I've been reading The Black Monday Murders, and the artist that's called Tom Coker. It's just, it's really, really strong work. And so that's the other thing about comics, because I'm quite new to it. I keep on finding people that probably others know really well. And
it's
really good.
That's one of the things I love about it, because, like, I know some names, but you know, creators, readers, listeners to the show, they introduced me to so many other people. I love discovering things.
You can't be snobbish about it. I mean, I've been reading comics for almost 50 years, and you sent me some images of a comic that blew me away this week, Vince. And I'm like, we've all got to be open to it, haven't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Right, okay, what else did Thorpey say? Good old Thorpey, part of the show. One other thing, as a creator, I take notes on how the pros compose their panels and tell stories. I don't know what happened to my voice then. Stories. Is this something...
Just pretend it was the audio slang. Yeah. Just go with it.
Well, I can't do that now because I've said it. I've announced it. Anyway, is that something you still can continue to do? So do you make notes on, or like... sort of scribble down on how other people sort of do their work?
Yeah, I do, and I spend quite a lot of time working out layouts, but like today, going to that comics portfolio, Steve Tanner was really good, because he sort of, that was one of the things he picked up. He said there's certain panels where your eye wants to go down instead of across because of the way you've sort of arranged your panels on the page, and that was really handy and useful advice, because you can take that and actually do something with it. So that's what I mean. That was, but yeah, but I try to make sure that the person who's speaking is on first in the panel, and sort of, you know, just follow the basic rules really. But he was also talking about splash pages, that they should always fall on the left-hand side.
Interesting.
Was that when you turn the page?
You get that shock splash.
Like a reveal.
I can see some thought around that.
All of mine are on the right.
But are you looking for that shock value of a splash page, or are you looking for that leading into the beauty of it? Do you know what I mean? There's different reasons, isn't there, for a splash page, I suppose. I can see where Steve's coming from totally, but sometimes to be led down that road into a forest that is a splash page in front of you is an interesting dynamic. I don't know.
I did spend quite a lot of time thinking about how the two pages would sit next to each other in the book.
That one
mentioned with the, where she's jumping down and the swallow's sort of flying in front of her. If you look on the next page, she's landed on the bottom of the page and the swallow's landed at the top of the page on the opposite page. So it's sort of leading you onto the next page.
When I often fuck up, putting two bleed pages together that are unrelated... because I do mine I work obviously like as a webcomic, I can do two pages, and then when I put them together, I say, oh fuck, they're two bleed pages, and it'd be like a big landscape, and then it'd be right next to another landscape, and it doesn't always work like that when you see them on a page.
I tell you what, that sort of what those sort of pages, going back to that page of her floating through the air, what it kind of reminds me of, and Tony will probably know what I'm talking about here, is the very first Grendel book, Devil by the Deed. Is that
another very, very balletic sort of, you know, it's a real dance of a murder, isn't it, almost?
And that's almost, it's less comics, it's more like an illustrated sort of story, isn't it?
It's true, actually. There's lots of blocks of text on there.
I think you should definitely see if you can find some images of that online, Ian, because that's...
Yeah, I will do.
That's Mike Grell, isn't it? Was that his first?
No, it's John Wagner, isn't it?
John Wagner? Matt Wagner?
Not Matt Wagner, sorry. John will probably beat me up for that.
But that's hugely fascinating, like seeing what Matt's work is like now. And so when I picked that up for the first time, I thought, oh, first Grendel book, you know, start at the beginning. And it so wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Matt Wagner and Eric Larson are two artists that people should follow on Facebook, because they give so much advice.
Yeah.
It's really good, all about tangents and things leading into other things, and why is that arm hidden by that, and what's the point in covering this bit up in a panel, and really, really. Eric Larson took a couple of pages of art apart this week, and very sort of kindly said, look, I really love this artist, but these are a few things that if I was going to point them out, and everything in it was on point. Really interesting stuff. Listen, guys, I've got to go. Sorry, I've got the phone call.
Someone at the door?
Someone at the door?
Please use the sound effect, Vince.
Yeah.
Cue
the
someone in my loo.
Yeah. But yeah, let's say goodbye to Tony, everyone. Goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.
See you later, babe. Sweating.
See you, babe.
Bye.
That will get you every time, won't it, Dan?
It will.
It is totally what you do all the time now, isn't it? That's just become the way you talk to each other. It's beautiful. it's beautiful. Okay, we got one more question from... Oh, God, I just shut the page down. Right, I've got to bring it back up again.
Oh, no.
Here we go. Right, okay, from Ludology 2014. Okay. He also, or he or she, also sent a couple of questions. First one is, how do I stop hating everything I create? Asking for a friend. do you have a healthy amount of self-loathing for your artwork, Ian? I think we all do in some ways, but...
Yeah, you can always see your own mistakes, and I just, if I'm not sure, I just shade it in.
Yeah. God bless the colouring and the inking. That's all. Or a well-placed thought speech bubble. That's saved me many a time.
I think the trick is just to keep moving forward all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The more time you spend looking back at what you've done and what mistakes you've made, the less time you're spending improving on your art and getting better at it.
Yeah.
I know that sounds very kind of like, kind of just a bit of advice, but seriously, just don't beat yourself up over... stuff you've done in the past, because ultimately it's self-defeating. Just use that energy to kind of to work on stuff now.
We live in an age where Photoshop, I mean, I certainly with Murder Row, sort of the third part, I've had to fix a couple of things in Photoshop, like add some stuff or completely replace a panel. So if someone sees the original page, they'll think, well, that looks a bit wonky. But in the final product, it looks good because I redrew it on a separate piece of paper and then photoshopped it in. You know,
that's so fine.
Yeah. No one ever knows, do they? Unless they listen to this show and they know.
I don't feel guilty about anything like that at all, because I know, I think back in the day when they were first doing comics, it was all one piece of paper. Yeah. If they'd have had access to do this stuff, they would have done it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like you see original pages and like stuff is taped over it, white out. You know, there's all kinds going on, isn't it?
That's just part of the process, really, isn't it? Yeah. Correcting your mistakes. And I mean, the students I teach, they have quite, you know, some of them have such low self-esteem that they're scared to draw anything on the page. It's like just afraid to make a mistake. And you've got to make those mistakes if you're going to go forward, really.
Yeah.
The mistake is where you learn something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to fail if you're going to succeed. Well, that was deep. Right? Yeah. also,
my first lot of art, I didn't put any backgrounds in any of my panels. I just had the figures in the foot. So when I look back on the stuff that I did right at the start, I just think it's there's just no setting. You don't know where they are.
I mean, I think that's a go-to for a lot of artists when they first start doing it. They can just like, Rob Liefeld does it to this day, but not putting in their backgrounds. It's integral, like as much as the character. It's got to have that placing and the setting.
Yeah,
just loads of muscle-bound dudes fighting against generic colours and walls.
Yeah,
ain't gonna cut it.
Yeah,
in my opinion. Add that caveat.
Ludology also says, what normally are the differences you see between a pro and an amateur? Now, that sounds like a simple question, but I think in this day and age, the line is so thin now between the two, isn't it? Is there a difference in a lot of cases? I don't think there is. Is there?
That's a really hard question.
That's really tough. Have you been stumped? Every week.
Yeah.
There's stuff we see every week, which is like, this is, I could put this up against any professional book.
Do you think it is because they're seen as professional, if they've got a quirk to their art where it's a bit more stylized, that's celebrated and they can push that? Where if you're an amateur artist and you've got that same thing going on in your work, people might pull you up on that and say you're not drawing this correctly. Do you know what I mean?
Stylistically,
I don't know. That's,
I can see that, because like one of my faves, Ryan Otley, he kind of like, his stuff has got more and more exaggerated as
Yeah, that's what progressed. I mean. You've got more license to put, like, Sean Gordon Murphy as well. His style's really...
Yeah.
I think...
totally to the point where it's, like, you know, full-on ink washes and, like, becomes really loose, doesn't it?
I watched an interview with him, and I think an editor was telling him he needed to stop being so scratchy and draw something. And he said, so he just gave up and went and made Punk Rock Jesus by himself, kind of pretty much.
There you go.
Yeah. And now look where he is now. So he's just stuck to his guns.
Yeah.
I think with inks and stuff, the quality of the lines and stuff can really win out. And it's just such a confidence you can see in the line. It's a tricky one to put your finger on that one. That's a good question.
Yeah, well, there you go. We were almost stumped, but then
I mean, obviously you see work which is amateurish, but then on the flip of that, we've seen stuff that's just absolutely amazing. I was rereading Away by John Late and
Grant Richards.
He posted a new painting of Away that he'd done bloody on Instagram
insane.
Today.
It's crazy good. It's just stunning stuff.
But that's his pro work, straight right there.
Yeah, I mean,
without doubt, like it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, if you expanded upon it, you know, what do you define as being a professional comic book artist or writer or whatever? Is it being paid? Because then.
Mm.
You know, being paid for your work, then arguably most people are in their own ways, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tricky one. Is it the old thing of you're making a living off of what you're doing? But then some people might be a professional electrician and then they don't do that.
Yeah.
But they still got up to that standard that they can do it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
I imagine at one point it's a bit more black and white, but now it seems to be the line is.
It's very much blurred,
especially with art.
Yeah, and you get a lot of independent creators that you know get so successful that you know that's their full time job now. Do you know what I mean? Or you know that they're winning Eisner awards or their stuff's being adapted all over the world and stuff. You know that crosses the line. Is that making it in comics? Then do you know it's. They're all fairly loose questions, aren't they, really? Mm. But, if you've listened to this show, you know we have absolutely no answer for. So,
I mean, don't come to us for answers, basically.
No. But but if you've got questions, please ask them.
Yeah, ask them anyway.
Because you never know what you're going to get. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Stopped clocks and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I tell you what, we got with this show, we got a very, you know, it's been good to have a real sort of in depth talk about art as well. Mm. You know, we're gonna definitely with some of the upcoming weeks, we're gonna get more about process. You know, I love talking a bit about artistic process and stuff because finding out about how other people do things. And I mean, for instance, I can't believe it's all pencils, Ian. I still can't believe. Yeah.
To be honest, I've got the way I colour as well. I haven't got a drawing tablet, so I tried using a mouse, but I couldn't get along with it. So I've ended up just using, the touchpad on your laptop.
Really? Oh my
god! It's like digital finger painting.
Yeah.
But because I did it with the first couple of pages, I was like, I better do it with the rest, otherwise it might not be consistent. But need to buy a tablet.
You can get like a cheap whack on one, like second hand off of eBay for not much money. I'd recommend,
I thought they were dead expensive. Are they?
It depends which one you're looking for. If you're looking for like the ones that are on screen, but if you're looking the ones where you look at the computer monitor with your hand working on the tablet, you can get them relatively cheap.
Yeah, all right, okay.
I'd, check them out.
Dan's not a salesman.
No,
you're not getting commission, are you, Dan?
No, sadly not.
Oh,
if people from Wacom are listening, email open. But one of the other things, Ian, is on the Instagram, your work, your style and the way you're working changes so much. It's fantastic. I'm blown away by it. Because one minute you'll post up work and it's like, oh, that's amazing. Then the next bit, it'd be like in a different medium. Almost like in a complete different style, and it's just as accomplished. I was really impressed.
Yeah, well, then the new project I mentioned, I'm doing all that in watercolours as well, so it's completely different style again. I don't know. I think it depends how what it's for. I think with the comics, I try and keep it as like clean and as as detailed as possible. But when I'm doing a sketch or a portrait, I'm a lot looser with my line and a lot less worried about getting everything perfect, to be honest. But that's really kind of you. Thanks a lot.
No probs. It's all true.
Yeah. And the proof is in the pudding, because the book looks amazing. And congrats to you and the Accent guys for the Kickstarter.
Top work.
Well deserved. Well deserved indeed. So this is going to be... The Kickstarter is currently still going as we speak.
Yeah, it's got 14 days still left on it. 14 days. We got 100 backers the other day, so we're delighted, because that was like a little goal we had in our head. So
awesome.
And Gary Crutchley, the other artist at Accent UK, he did a little pin-up for it, so that'll go out to everyone who backs the comic.
Amazing. So, you know, if you listen to this episode fresh, definitely go on the Kickstarter and just have a look and see what we've been talking about, because you'll be on board for this comic.
I've got to mention another guy as well called Matt Soff. He's doing some of the artwork as well. He's coloured some of the pieces I've done. His work is amazing.
I've seen some of his work on I've seen his work on Instagram. Bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
He did an image of Burt Reynolds recently.
Yeah. He's really good.
Obviously when our dear Burt went off to the it's your idol, isn't he, Dan? You got so many idols.
Well, I used to watch me and my mates used to watch Cannibal Run.
Oh, classic.
And Smokey and the Bandit as a kid so much.
Yeah. So
and,
good.
It is a ledge.
Yeah. But, Matt's image of Burt Reynolds from, I think it's Deliverance, I think. It's just a brilliant piece, and his artwork in general is just awesome.
It's really good, yeah.
I was trying to find a quote from Burt Reynolds that I read a couple of months ago, but he was like in a bar and some like youngster came up and said, what do you do if I took that rug off your head, referring to his toupee? And he said, well, if you can get it off before I beat the shit out of you, you can keep it. I thought, what'll do.
Amazing. Amazing. As was this chat, Ian. Thank you very much for this.
Thanks for having me on. I sort of mentioned it before, but I did pretty much do the whole of that book listening to your podcast. So,
God,
it's kind of weird being on
it. It still turned out all right. Unbelievable.
Quite a few artists listen to this while they work, so we've had some kind of influence in their work for real or good.
No, it's been brilliant. Thank you so much for having me on.
That's all right. But don't go anywhere, because you're sticking with us, and you're gonna you've got something to recommend soon, like we have, I think. So we're going to talk about more great comics in a minute. But do we have any shout outs, Dan?
Yes, I've got a fantastic comic to shout out about. Issue 2 of Captain Cosmic.
Oh yes,
from Andy W. Clift. It's currently on Kickstarter with 11 days to go as of this podcast. It's fantastic. I'll back the first one. I'm going to be back in the second. It's a Silver Age inspired space superhero, Captain Cosmic, and this time he's got a young sidekick with him. It's great. This really good comic last time that Andy put out, and so well done and polished. I can't recommend it highly enough. And there's a tier where you can get issue 1 and 2 in print, so I'd recommend getting that if you didn't get a chance to back it the first time around.
Awesome. Yes, very good. That's the second time Andy's been mentioned this week as well.
Yeah.
He's not paying us, but we love him.
Emails are open. Give a shout.
Our PayPal is... No. But that's definitely another awesome comic to check out. I just want to give next week's show is going to be... Because obviously, when you listen to next week's show, you would have had Thought Bubble. The wonderful Thought Bubble, which is taking place in Leeds City Centre between the 22nd and the 23rd of September 2018. There's an amazing sort of lineup of guests such as like Warren Ellis, Greg Rucker, Charlie Adlard. Who else have we got here? We've got Kate Brown, Stephen Byrne. I mean, I'm just picking Al Ewing. There's a huge list. I could go on for days. Some of our future guests are going to be there, but also there's an awful lot of amazing exhibitors, some of whom have been on the show, some of whom we've talked about on the show, and there's an awful lot of amazing books being launched at Thought Bubble this year. I know Thought Bubble seems to be the book launch venue of the year every time that September rolls around. All you lovely comic printers out there, you are doing good work. You are doing fantastic work, because the demand for you goes up 200% when it comes to Thought Bubble. So, you know, thanks to these lovely people, there's going to be some amazing new books to check out. So I could list them all, but I'm not going to, because that would be the rest of the show.
There's some articles from Pipe Dream, Place to Hang Your Cape, maybe Down the Tubes, and a couple other places of sort of ones to look out for. And there's many.
Yeah, there is many.
Especially from our friends at Avery Hill. They've got a slew of great books.
Oh, God, yes. One of which I might be talking about in a minute. But yes, certainly we'll put those lovely sites, those good people from Pipe Dream, Down the Tubes, etc. We'll put the links in our show notes. So if you listen to this and you're going to Thought Bubble, check out those articles, make your shopping list, because I think you need a shopping list. I think if you go there to browse, you'll be lost.
We've got some lovely feedback from the ladies at Wine and Zine last week.
That's
title we can highly recommend.
Yeah.
They'll be launching at Thought Bubble, so check out that one too.
Yep, and I just want to give another shout out. Some of these books that you're going to see at Thought Bubble might appear in future shows, so we might be raving about
if we're lucky. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out, and the second time he's been talked about this episode as well, old Daryl Thorpe, because Errol versus Evil. I got that book, the printed copy, through the post via Kickstarter. I got it about a week or so ago, and you're going to hear more about this book in a future show, but I will say this is a beautiful piece of work. But I won't do it justice yet. But next week's show is going to be one where it's a Three Amigos show, where we've been sent an awful lot of hugely quality work, whether it be emails or we've been lucky enough to be given physical copies. So we've had the to read pile, and we're going to go through it. And we're all going to pick like a couple of books that we're going to talk about, you know, some of these people that you need to check out. So, you know, if you're feeling blue after Thought Bubble, then listen to us and you'll feel even worse. No, you know, we'll add to your shopping list. So, so that's next week's show. But as for this week's show, I mean, it's already been a fantastic one. Doesn't time fly when you're having fun, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Yeah.
It does.
How are you finding your first visit to Awesome Pod Towers, Ian? Is it all right?
It's awesome.
He knows what to say. But what we do have now, we're at the recommendation section of the show. I'm so enthusiastic that I always have to pause at this moment, thinking, have I missed something out? I swear there's something there.
No, it's all good.
No, we're doing all right, aren't we? Yeah, we're doing all right so far. This is good. But yes, it's the recommendation section of the show. And who would like to go first, Ian or Dan? Who wants to go first?
I don't mind going first.
Go for it, Dan. Kick us off.
I've been in contact with Matt Garvey. He said, passing a message that he hates you, Vince. But I think you know that already.
I just want to say this on the record right now. Matthew Elizabeth Garvey. I want to put to bed this anger, this violence. I want to express how much I love you on a deep spiritual and emotional level. And no matter what you say to me, you will always be number one in my heart. And yes, I just want to embrace you and hold you. And I love you. And please, you left your underwear here last weekend. So if you could come and pick it up, because I'm not touching that. There you go. Carry on, Dan.
There you go, Matt. Yes. So he recently released issue 4 of The Devil in Disguise. And I tracked down issue 1 on Comixology because I haven't read it. And it's great. I really enjoyed it. It's art by Robert Ahmed and words by Matt Garvey. So essentially the whole comic is in three tones, apart from the lettering, is black, white and orange. So it's a really nice sort of... colour palette and colour choices there. I think that comes into play a little later on, But essentially, without ruining the story, a young chap is on the subway. A pregnant woman, an unnamed carriage, pregnant woman comes along, gets in some real distress, and then it all kind of goes downhill from there. There's a real kind of Wicker Man supernatural vibe to it, and it's sort of the birth of a supernatural superhero, which comes in, I presume, in issue 2, 3, and 4. But it's really well done. Again, Matt Garvey kind of having that pitch.
Yeah,
It's a bit hard to talk about, to be honest, without spoiling the premise. So I don't want to go into it too much, but it's really well done. Really enjoyed it. It's made me want to just go and get the rest immediately.
It keeps you guessing, doesn't it? The story really does. It goes off in different directions, and certainly issue 4 didn't end the way I thought it was going to end. You think you're in for a conventional sort of superhero style story, but Matt always does things slightly different, doesn't he?
Turns on his head.
Yeah.
See, I've only read 1. I didn't want to read 4 without reading the preceding ones.
Yeah.
So, but it's really nice. I really enjoyed it. It's the kind of the supernatural stuff and the kind of satanic worship stuff is spot on as well. Really well done.
Yeah.
And I'd wondered sort of how the art style would handle it, but it does a really good job. And screw up. There's a fantastic joke when we talk about the splash page.
Yeah.
Especially when I was reading it in Guided View, that there's these three subordinates saying, "Oh, they fucked up, and what's their punishment going to be?" And they say, "Oh, no, it'll be all right." They go to the next panel, it's their three heads on stakes. that really did make me laugh.
Yeah,
it's a good little story, and I recommend it. It's only 69p on Comixology. You can't really go wrong.
Yeah, he's very prolific, Matt, and he gets some great artists. I mean, I think issue 4 is the best issue of the lot, and you know that's what you kind of want, isn't it? You want to finish strong when it comes to your stories.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff, and I think he's going to collect it at some point soon. I believe.
Yeah, I would very much be interested in buying the collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, so awesome. So we'll put a link.
Just keep them coming, Matt.
Yep. And no doubt what I said is going to come back to bite me in some way, shape,
or form. Of course it will.
The fight goes on. Fight goes on. Ian, what would you like to recommend for our lovely listeners?
Well, am I all right to recommend an Accent UK book?
Of course you can.
Yeah, I'm just going to recommend Western Noir. I mentioned earlier that I did a short anthology called Tales Western Noir, but the actual main book, I think it's running into like 8 issues now, and it's written by Dave West and Gary Crutchley, and Gary does the art as well. I think the original concept actually came up by Andy Blow, but I don't think he could do the book in the end, so it got picked up by Gary, and his artwork in it's fantastic. It's really clean lines with grayscale all the way through it. And it's just spanning over years now that they've been working on it. And to build up something so well considered and thought out is just, it's an amazing achievement, really. That it's a story about a gunslinger, really, who inherits sort of like a book and some goggles that allow him to see monsters, and that's where the sort of like the noir element comes in, and he's got to go through wiping out these monsters on the request of an agency that he works for. But it's really cleverly done, and they play around with the story quite a lot, and they play around with the main character, and you're never quite sure if what's happening is real or if it's imagined. And he's a bit of a tortured soul and a bit of a loner and an outsider. And they've just done really well in bringing the character to life. And I don't know, I just think it's just a great series, and I'd recommend it to anyone, really.
Nice one.
Yeah. And the other thing that Dave does is he's got a lot of characters that are in his books that he sort of, they're in a lot of different books that he writes. So he's building like a little universe for himself, I suppose. So it's really, they're a really interesting company, and it's a really great book.
Awesome.
That's it, really.
Cool. Yeah.
We don't get too many Western comics, do we? I mean, we've had some from the Dead Canary guys.
Yeah.
They must be out there.
Yeah, there's a couple of indie ones, but like, you know, especially in the UK scene, you don't see too much of them. I'd say it'd be nice to see more. I do like the Western genre.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yeah, those Dead Canary guys do some really good work.
Yeah, and Accent UK, they've been plugging away for quite a few years, so it's good to get them a shout out on the show. So there you go. That's another one for the show notes. Right, my recommendation for this week, if you're going to Thought Bubble, this is going to be a release from Avery Hill Publishing. We were very fortunate to get a few sort of preview copies of what they're going to be releasing. And I had the chance to check out Retrograde Orbit by Christina Baczynski. Now, Christina is a... She's a British creator, Eisner Award nominee, and this is an amazing book. I've been wanting to check out some of Christina's work for quite some time. You know, I follow her on Twitter and stuff, and you know, she does great illustrations. I don't want to say this for certain because I'm always wrong about everything every week, but I think this might be her first outright graphic novel from beginning to end. And what this is, it's set in the outer edges of a remote solar system. There's a young girl called Flint who questions whether to stay with her family in the mining colony they've made their home, or whether to heed the lure of a new path on a mysterious faraway planet. I was so surprised by this book. I absolutely loved it. I absolutely burned through it. It's 108 pages, cover to cover. It's so wonderfully told. This is it's an unconventional character sort of story that will really touch your heart, I think. There's some moments of real poignance which kind of showcases how like good science fiction it can be used to tell like really personal stories and heartfelt stories. And the reason I say that is this: every character in this story is an alien. We're not talking humanity here. They're all like strange creatures and of different designs. And Flint, the main girl, basically her family left their planet because of bad things that happened there, and like, you know, so she's grown up on this new mining colony, and she's always thought about the planet that her family came from, and she's wanted to go there. But of course, like, she talks to her grandmother and her mother, and they have very different views on what their old life was like. That's the story that plays out from there. Like, it sort of, you see this girl's life, you know, starting from school, and you know, sometimes she's seen as the weird kid who's always talking about that planet when all the other kids are like, oh, you know, she's the weird one that doesn't stop talking about that place. And she's got a friend who's just hilarious throughout the book. But it jumps for it's told in sort of kind of like chapters, and it jumps forward in sort of certain sections of time, like a few years, which is a nice pacing sort of storytelling sort of technique, I think, because you can do so much with it. You know, like one chapter ends on a sort of point, you know, a thoughtful sort of panel of someone looking out to the stars. You got your sort of break for a couple of pages, and when you jump back, 5 years has happened. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah,
it's a trick to do that well, though. To do it to the point that within a couple of pages, the reader has filled in the blanks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this does this flawlessly. You automatically know what's happened, where this character is going, and I think that speaks to the strength of the characters that are created in this book, that you get attached to them, you get to know them over the course of like the 108 pages. I mean, mainly you're with Flint and her family, and there's a real because she has such a strong vision of what she wants to do, and her family aren't really, you know, they don't seem supportive of it sometimes because of their past experiences. There is that butting of heads. So even though it's about aliens and different planets, this is a very human and personal story that I think works so much better than, you know, if it was a human story. Do you know what I mean? I think if it was all humans and this was just a standard, you know, like on Earth, if it was the same sort of story told on Earth, I'm not sure how you know, not moving to different planets, of course, but I don't think it would work as well.
Okay.
And not because of Christina's work, because Christina's work, like artwork and stuff, is amazing in this. There's a wonderful sort of quirky animated sort of style. You know, she's got a nice, unique style, and uses wonderful sort of tones. Like each chapter's have like different tones. There's one chapter that will be all in blue hues, and another one will be purples and greens and reds, which I think sort of you know, there's a different representation to feelings and mood there, as well as just looking nice. Yeah, but it's almost like by making it fantastical and alien, it's made it more human than if you were trying to make it human. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's because of the strength of the characters. It's you know, there's a brilliant sort of character piece. There's wonderful pages that have almost, you know, pretty much no words, and you're just seeing panels of characters looking into space, sometimes just space itself. Some creators may not want to use that sort of real estate to, you know, to dramatically tell a story, but it does so much. I think if you've got the chance, or you know, you're lucky enough to be able to use a couple of pages just for a landscape, if you use that landscape well, you can do a dramatic beat with it, which is what this book does all over. If you're at Thought Bubble, pick this up. Because, like I say, it's going to be worth it. You'll devour it on the train or the bus or whatever home. This is Avery Hill. They don't put out bad books, do they? I mean,
no.
We how many times have we mentioned on the show? And you know, obviously Dave and Ricky are good friends of the show, but they're putting out fantastic work by fantastic creators. So, and I'm because of this book, this is a creator that I'm going to look forward to seeing what the next book is going to be. Definitely Retrograde Orbit. If you like outer space and you like your heartstrings being pulled and just wonderful characters, then you will not go wrong with this. Now, if you don't pick up a Thought Bubble, it's also Avery Hill are releasing it on their website as well. Like I say, it's going to be at $11.99. You can get it from their website as well. So definitely check it out. And yes, the creator may be a future guest on the show.
That'd be fantastic.
Spoilers. But she also did a podcast once that I was a massive fan of that isn't about anymore. And she did it with her partner, Greg Johnson, who does brilliant comedy on YouTube anyway. But the Jetisons, top three in space. Did you ever hear of this?
No.
It's a really small show, but basically what they were, they said it in a fantastical, they're basically on a spaceship, and this spaceship, you know, has some problems. So every week they've got to jettison three things from the ship in order to save everyone. But for instance, the three things could be your top three biscuits, your top three Steven Spielberg films, and your top three, I don't know, songs by Wham or something like that. So they would have a discussion about like which ones to get rid of and which ones to keep. And yeah, I'll put a link because that's just fun. They're not, obviously they're really busy doing other things now. They've gone on to bigger and better things, but that was proper good fun. That was. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, because that's great. So all our listeners should check out that as well. So there you go. That is my recommendation for this week. Did I ramble? I felt like I was rambling.
No, that's fine.
No, that was good.
When I get really passionate about a book, I feel like I'm just talking.
No. You want to kind of get over to the audience that much. You want to get away from it. It's tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky. Especially like on, like, we try not to spoil anything, do we?
I don't want to take that away from people.
Yeah, because you know we discover these books and we want people to discover them how we do. So so there you go. Finish strong.
Yeah. I did notice in the Awesome Comic group that they were talking about a Murder She Wrote podcast.
Was it Murder She Spoke or Murder They Spoke?
Murder She Spoke. Murder We Spoke.
I love that name. That's a great title.
Yeah. I mean, I must be a bit of a philistine because I don't even know how you break down an episode of Murder She Wrote.
No. I mean,
perhaps I should give it a listen.
Let's give that a listen and see if they talk about how wonderfully sexy every week of that show was. And just me? All right.
Okay. Yeah, I know, just you, man.
Okay. Hashtag Fletch lives. Anyway, thank you for listening this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, Tony's still stuck in the cubicle, so we'll say thank you from him as well. But yeah, get in touch with us if you agreed or you want to talk more about something we've discussed on this show. Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Also, if you've got fan art for Awesome Comics, issues 3 and 4, because we're collecting issues. I think we might be able to get some in to issue 3. You might get into the, under the wire if you email your fan art. And we've had some amazing stuff. It looks brilliant.
Oh, good, yeah.
Yeah. Email it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you want to actually get Awesome Comics and know what we're talking about every week on this show, where can they get it, Dan?
Oh, fuck, you can ask me for the web address, which I never remember.
Oh, you're so prepared with everything else.
If you
else.
Google Big Cartel and Awesome Comic podcast, it pops up.
Yeah. If you go to the Podbean page, there's a link to it in the show notes every week. And issue 3 is approaching and just around the corner. That'll be launching in Nottingham. So
yeah, awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com. And it's a pound for a digital issue, £3 for a print.
Crazy good value.
Very good prices.
We're not good at this shameless self-promoting, are we? We need to get better at it, but yeah. So, but yeah, definitely, we're very proud of the comic. It's real good fun, and like, there's only more greatness to come. So definitely check that out. Also, follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be announcing like future guests and putting out some questions, and you know, we'll have to get back onto that Kickstarter call out. Been forgetting it for the past few weeks, so we need to.
Yes.
Yeah. So on Thursday,
we are still doing our comic book thing though. New comic book day covers.
Oh yes, we do two things. What we do every Wednesday, we pick 4 covers from the Comixology browse, 4 covers we like, and we just post them for people to check out. Cool covers. We've had some. You know, it's lovely to get feedback of like, I don't know about you, but I like a comic book cover.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just opening up my eyes to see what other designs are out there, and some of them are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we do that every Wednesday, and every Thursday is the Kickstarter call-out. So if you have a Kickstarter campaign that you want to get us to retweet and shout about, send it on Thursday to @TheAwesomePod, and we'll retweet it and see if you can get some more eyes on it.
Boosting numbers up.
Yeah, indeed. It's all about the boost, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't like the boost.
They are good, yeah. Release the green boosts. They're like guava or something in it.
What? What is guava?
I don't know. I'm just glad they don't put it boosts anymore.
Yeah. Isn't that bat? No. Bat shit is guano. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be terrible.
A guano flavored boost we could well do without.
Everyone's going bat shit over the new guano boosts. Anyway, from batshit to good shit, and that's all you'll find if you go to facebook.com/ awesome comics podcast.
See you, Tony.
Whew, I got there in the end. I told you I'd be back in the game. Yes, and if you want to join a group that's all about talking about making comics and like the good comic discussion, and you do Facebook, then go to Awesome Comics Talk. Which is a fantastic group, and there's lots of great conversation on there every week. So yeah, it's the only thing I read on Facebook, really.
Yeah. I'm not a massive fan of Facebook anymore.
No. What are we a fan of, Dan?
Comics.
Yeah. God, you really. Well, sorry. You really put everything into that, didn't you? Yeah, I suppose comics, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, comics.
Yeah, comics, and you lovely people. And thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. Thank you to all the people that left a review recently, and just spread the word about the show. It's brilliant. We are on Spotify. Thank you for listening there as well. I think we're going to get some people catching up on older shows via Spotify, which is quite cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we do have a lot of people sort of like, I think people save up our shows and then listen to them. And if you do that, And people apologise to us at the show. We don't care. You don't have to listen every week. If you've listened to this two years later, we don't care. You've listened. We love you. That's all that matters.
We enjoyed it. It's all good.
Exactly. We're also on the other networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Dan?
Pod Bollock.
The classic ones are always the best, aren't they? So thanks for listening to us there. Now, where can people find us on Twitter, online, etc.? Tony.
Well, you can find me online.
You can find the wonderful Tony Edmund at SOYes on Twitter.
neverironanything.blogspot.com,
which you should check out anyway, because that is, we can be nice about him because he's not here now. But
I mean, Tony puts up a raft of reviews and they're really well done.
Yeah, and well thought out articles and stuff. Yeah, we like to give him shit, but you know, he's doing really good work in the name of comics.
Those onions, yeah.
I need to say thank you as well, because he put a preview of Care up, so I really appreciated that as well.
Nice one, Tony.
Yeah.
There you go.
So we've been far too nice to him. He'll think that we want something from him now, won't we? Yeah.
We may do.
Mm.
We may do. Talk about it after the show.
Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yep. And much like a Viper, you're absolutely smashing it, my friend. Awesome. Cheers. Stuff. Caught up on it
back
this week.
Two pages a week now Viper's done.
Yeah. Loving it. Especially now that the is it the White Witch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that character.
This is kind of like bedding in all the story before it all kind of starts going off again in the next issue. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at JesterDiablo. And Ian, thank you once again for being our guest this week. Where can people find you? Obviously on Instagram.
Yeah,
ian.ashcroft.art on Instagram, and KWordsmiths on Kickstarter.
Awesome. And brilliant. And you're going to be at Nottingham in October.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Definitely follow Ian on Instagram. It's great.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. So another one in the can. So there's a Tony joke there somewhere. So thank you all for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Ian and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Look forward to Thought Bubble. Travel safe. Have a brilliant time. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Back of the net. See you next week, folks.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.